A Black Executive Perspective.
We are coming to you live from the new BEP studio for another thought-provoking episode of a Black Executive Perspective podcast, a safe space discussing all matters regarding race, culture, and those uncomfortable topics people tend to avoid, and we hope that you enjoy this taste. I am your host, Tony Tidbit.
And I'm your co-host, Chris P. Reed. And we're here to tackle the real, raw, and often uncomfortable truths shaping our world. No fluff, no filters, just bold conversations on the issues that matter. From power and politics to culture and corporate America, we break it all down live with you without holding anything back. So give us what you got. Engage. We love it.
Absolutely. And today, as Chris said, we got a jam-packed episode for you guys today. So again, as he stated, we're looking for your feedback. We're going to ask you guys some questions. So I want you to definitely engage, give us your thoughts, because today we're going to break down America's most pressing headlines. We are here to talk about three powerful stories, stories of shaping America's culture and civic landscape. First, the leaked racist group chats that rock the young Republicans. To navigating bias and ambition in corporate America, we're going to dive into that, to why local elections matter more than ever before. So our goal today is to have a conversation that dives into leadership, accountability, and the everyday choices that define who we are as a nation, online, at work, and at the ballot box. So my brother, you ready to dive into it?
Man, I'm chomping at the bit.
All right, let's do it.
This morning, new fallout after the leak of racist text messages linked to members of young Republican groups across the country. The website Politico says it obtained 7 months worth of messages from a group chat in which racist and anti-Semitic slurs were used more than 250 times.
It's awful. It's revolting. It's disgusting. It's obnoxious.
Politico says Peter Junta, who was the chair of the New York State Young Republicans, allegedly wrote in a text message, "Everyone that votes no is going to the gas chamber." In another exchange, Junta reportedly responded, "Great, I love Hitler," during a discussion about backing a right-wing candidate. Some Republicans have denounced the language, while Vice President J.D. Vance dismissed the messages as edgy, offensive jokes.
We're not canceling kids because they do something stupid in a group chat.
But reports say at least 8 of the 11 participants in the group chat are between 24 and 34 years old and include a state senator from Vermont and a federal official. Some participants apologizing, while others claim the messages were taken out of context or doctored. California Governor Gavin Newsom is demanding a congressional investigation. But Vice President J.D. Vance says some Democrats have said worse and says there should not be a rush to judgment.
By the way, if they were left-wing kids telling stupid left-wing jokes, I would also not want their lives to be ruined because they're saying something stupid in a private group chat.
At least 3 of the people involved have now lost their jobs, and the Vermont Republican governor is now calling on that state senator to resign.
So, buddy, you know, I want to hear your thoughts. Let me hear your thoughts, and then I'll jump in.
So, of course, I'm always dismayed when I hear the whatabouts, right? And that's all. That seems to be the go-to thing is, well, what about this person, that person, blah, blah, blah. Now, the one thing that is a positive is the concept of the fact that we are in a situation where we see this happen with the Charlie Kirk thing. People were saying stuff, and then something happened because they said some stuff online. Although this may have been private, theoretically, you just got to be mindful that anything you put out there is out there. I'll say this, you know, before I hand it off to you. Freedom of speech means that you can express your views without government censorship, but it doesn't protect you from all repercussions. You can have social ostracism. You can have loss of employment, counter speech. You can have people that, you know, go against you or turn against you because of your right to feel like you can say whatever you want to say. So you have to be mindful before you hit send at all times, like Herm Edwards would say. But you don't, long as it's not, you know, inciting violence or creating threats or defamation or obscene language, you have a lot of latitude in the things that you believe in that you would like to express. But be willing to stand by that shit. Like, be willing to stand on it. If that's where you at, that's where you at. That's fine. Be willing to ride out with whatever opinions that you tend to present. I just don't like the fact that when people get caught up, in these concepts. And all of a sudden it's, wait a second. Whoa, that doesn't really.
It's out of context.
Man, it's man, you know what I mean? And that's immature. So.
Yeah, I mean, look, this is, we're not, this ain't nothing new. I mean, to be honest, who are these, some group of people making racist jokes and right. stuff, and they're private? You kidding me? It happens right now while we chatting, somebody calling his name. All right. So, I mean, that ain't nothing new, you know, and again, we're, you know, here's the thing. There's the only issues I have. Number one, it just goes to show in 2025, we still have these issues. Mm-hmm. Okay. Number two, you can't separate a job or a title from a biased human being. Mm-hmm. Okay. So you can be Republican, you could be Democrat, you could be independent, you can be a judge, you can be a baseball player, you can be a music teacher, you can be anything, right? Yeah, that doesn't separate you from these type of thoughts if this is what you believe. Okay, so that's really the biggest thing, is that it's not that they said it and this and that, is the young Republicans, right? Like, oh my God, here they go, we got them. You know, these Republicans said it. You kidding me? I mean, there's probably a group of Democrats probably said the same thing, okay, at some point. There's probably, I mean, so, and then let's throw all the other thing from homophobic type slurs. And right. So let's, I mean, look, this ain't nothing that's so shocking, okay? The shocking part to me is that you heard on the clip how everybody, you know, renounced those, that verbiage, right? And said, tried to hold them accountable, where the vice president, and you know, I mean, all you got to do is say, hey, look, this type of language is not, you know, accepted. We don't believe in it. He goes on and start talking about, oh, we don't want to ruin these kids' lives, right? What are you talking about? Okay. At the end of the day, it's about checking people and holding them accountable. Number two, isn't his kids mixed race? Mm-hmm. Okay, is it so? If somebody started talking about his kids, mm-hmm. right, to their, I mean, and hold on, let's be fair here. Let's say the teachers at school had a group chat mm-hmm. at his daughter's or his son's school, mm-hmm. and they were sitting back saying racist stuff against his family. Okay, and then it got leaked, and then matter of fact, he was coming there to pick the kids up. They were like, "Oh, Vice President, how you doing?" All right, but then at the same time, they're saying all this stuff about your kids and how they this and they're called that and this and that, and then it comes out, and you find out, you're gonna sit here and say, "Oh, it's no big deal." You kidding me? And your kids, and here's the thing: you can't keep it from your kids. Right. Because your kids' friends are going to say something, this and that, whole nine yards. Wouldn't they want their father to take up for them and say, number one, now, if you say you want to forgive the person, that makes sense, mm-hmm. right? But you still want to hold them accountable. Absolutely. To say, hey, at the end of the day, this is not acceptable. And I don't care if it was my kids they were talking about, tomorrow, to next person's kids or this person, it's unacceptable. And then, you know, hey, the kids apologize and say, hey, I'm sorry, I shouldn't have did that. Okay, you want to accept the apology, that's fine, right? But you still got to hold them accountable.
We cannot have people in policy that have strong beliefs in such a way that they're willing to openly discuss these. So I understand what you're saying. You can't separate the job from the person, but that would give argument to the pedophile being a teacher. We have to have a situation where when people exhibit that they don't have the qualifications that this job entails, which is representing the public interest, right? Representing the public interest is what these young political individuals had at their disposal, and they've shown that they don't have the general public interest at heart. So therefore, they can't hold those positions, Tony. They can't have those jobs.
So Chris, we're talking two different things. I'm not okay. saying that. I say hold them accountable. So gotcha. That means taking them down from their positions and stuff to that nature. Okay. That's fine. I'm not saying you don't do that. Okay. What I'm saying, I'm not surprised. Okay. And here's the thing. They didn't say it in front of, like, they said it. They had their own little group, right. okay, right. that they said it, right? Right. Now, like you said, when it comes out, and you're supposed to be a judge, or you are a, not supposed to be, you are a judge, or you are a teacher, and it comes out, you got to be held accountable, because your job is not just based on a certain group, it's for everyone. Now, all that being said, I mean, let's be fair here. How many times it hasn't come out, and you walk into work right now, and you get in the elevator, and somebody, hey, Chris, how you doing, right? And at the end of the day, they think of you in a certain way. But not only that, it's okay. If somebody thinks of you a certain way and there's no action to it, you're nothing you can do about that, right? But then they have the keys to stop you from moving forward or spitting venom, right? In other conversations that you're not privy to, right? Because of their bias. That's when it becomes, you see my point? And so we have no clue. Who those, see, this is what drives me crazy, man. People are quick to say, look at them, look at them, look at them. Look at you. I remember years ago, I'm not going to tell you the radio station. I listen to sports talk all the time, right? Okay. And I remember years ago, this is probably the 90s, they did this little, I don't want to say it was a contest, but they used to have these callers that called in all the time. And then so the two hosts were going to take the day off, and they created this thing that, you know, the people could vote on the callers that they figure would take their day, take their spot for the day. So it gave them an opportunity to be a sports talk host. And be fair, one of those individuals, and maybe all the, they became, eventually became a sports talk host, and they actually hired this person on the radio, right? But this brother, he got on, okay? And I'm like, listen, every time I heard the brother call in, it was all about race. They don't do this. They don't do that. They don't do this to us. They don't do that. He wasn't lying. Yeah, but all his whole commentary was about that, right?
Right.
So here's the kicker. So they had him on the show. But he had a part. He had like the morning. Somebody had the midday. Somebody had the afternoon. So it was three of them, right? And then so the host made a big deal about it. Not, to be fair, not both of them, but one of the hosts. Well, why do we have this guy coming on? All he talks about is race, this and that. So then the callers, okay, started calling up saying that they wasn't going to listen to the show because they don't believe in racism and this and that and the thing. And the whole nine. And I'm listening to this. Number one, the radio station don't. I think they had one black host. So number one, it was hypocrisy right off the bat. Number two, all these people calling in and saying these things and all this type of stuff when probably where they work at, they ain't no people of color. Number two, you see what I'm saying? So it's easy to start throwing shade at people and say, look at them, look at them, look at them. But then when you look under your own hood, and I don't mean that, no pun intended.
Right.
When you look under your own hood, right, where is your life shows that you don't have, you have a diverse background of friends or your company or all this type stuff, right? So that's my point here, is that at the end of the day, this ain't nothing new. It's always going to happen. This ain't the first time politicians were caught saying something. Well, it's not the first time that some judges or any, that's my point. Any endeavor, because you have human beings, that's part of that endeavor, right? And so at the end of the day, it happens all the time. So I'm not wiping it away. I'm saying they should be held accountable. And when it comes out, everybody, no matter what your political affiliation, no matter what your group, no matter what, everybody should hold them accountable, and everybody should say, this, we have no place for this, period, the end. That's it. Correct. And then if you do that, buddy, see, this thing, if everybody did that, this wouldn't even be. But what happens is it's a tit for tat, because evidently this attorney general, whose dude's running for attorney general in Virginia, you know, he made up you know, some type of I don't say it was a threat, but he made a comment saying that person that he was running against, or somebody he didn't like on the other side, a Republican, he was a Democrat, and he said they should get two bullets to the head, okay, and then their kids should be murdered and all that type stuff, right? And then what happens is, instead of the people around him, the Democrats and stuff to that nature, instead of them both saying, all the people around him saying, hey, that was wrong, he shouldn't have said that, you know, there should be repercussions, people start making excuses. Well, he's a good dude. Oh, you know, this and that. So two wrongs don't make a right. That's the oldest thing my mother told me years ago. Two wrongs are, so at the end of the day, you can't be calling somebody else and saying they should do this. And then when you see it, is if it's on your platform or whatever group you follow, and they do something just same thing or worse, you can't then give them a mulligan, okay? Everybody's got to call everything out immediately, no matter if it's your mother who did it, if it's your brother, if it's your neighbor, if it's your boss, it is what it is. And if everybody held everybody accountable, I wouldn't say you won't see these things, but everybody would be on the same page in terms of moving forward.
But that level of hypocrisy is rampant in most recent times. You know, in the before times,
there's no question.
It was a situation where you were bound by what you said. You had to be a man of your word, woman of your word, you know, whatever it was. And reputation mattered, because the reality of it is, you know this and I know this, somebody who doesn't have your best interest in mind can sully your reputation in a corporate sphere. They can whisper and innuendo and those little things behind closed doors. If they get enough gumption to go in front of people and speak bad about you behind your back, if you don't have a good network of individuals that ride out with you, that can really derail your opportunities. And it's nothing, like you said, you can't help what people say about you. All you can do is perform. But for some people, some of us, a subset of this society, it matters more when somebody says something than someone else. If you go around talking bad about Bob, the accountant, and they like, well, you know, that's just Tony. He wish he could have Bob's life and he hating. But if Bob go and talk about Tony, the sales guy, they like, there may be some credence to what he said. Tony does think a lot of himself, and all of the qualifications to a good salesman, he's using as a negative against you, right? And those things are toxic in a work environment, and especially in a corporate environment, because it's about relationships and networking and people working with people. And when you have that type of dissension amongst the ranks, it can become a bad situation.
Buddy, no question. Here's the thing, you know, and again, fortunately enough, I didn't grow up in an area, and I'm pretty sure you didn't too, unless you Benjamin Button, you know what I'm saying? Well, we didn't grow up in a time frame where people would say that right to your face in front of the street, okay? And wouldn't blink an eye, right? And that was the way it was. However, I remember, you know, my older relatives and friends of mine or family members who were around those times, and they'll say today, I like that person better because I knew who I was dealing with. Versus the person today who's smiling in your face, telling you everything and all, and acting like they this and that, and then they're back here having these type conversations. That's more dangerous to me, okay? And so at the end of the day, we have to all, as Americans, not even Americans, as humans, we have to call this stuff out, and it's unacceptable. And again, if your daughter said it, I know you love your daughter, right? And you can, and look, maybe she had a bad night. Maybe the meatloaf she ate got to her. And, you know, we can come up with a million reasons. But guess what? You still got to say it's unacceptable. I still love you, right? But it's unacceptable, right? And see, to your point, if we can get to that level, man, and we used to be it, to your point, but now it's a tit for tat. Well, look what you did. Or look what she did. Or look, and that doesn't make it go away. Okay, so we got to call these things out. But again, am I surprised, kid, buddy? This is right now while we chatting, somebody talking.
But it goes back to what you were saying, and we can wrap it here, Tony. It's the us versus them, as opposed to the singular entity that actually did it. If Jane does something, she's a bad apple. And we talked about this. If Chris does something, none of them.
No, the whole, group, the whole group, the whole group, they all that way. They all that way.
And ironically, like you said, we have enough evidence here to single out the culprits and hold them accountable for what they chose to present or represent based on who they are in the position that they have. Once again, I'm not saying cancel these people to where they can't have jobs or they can't
correct,
do this or that.
Correct.
What
correct,
I am saying is you have to realize certain personality types, certain predilections to your personality do not align with certain roles in society. And we have to be more cognizant of that and stop letting people who don't represent the public interest into the public forums to represent the public.
Like, well, here's the thing. Here's the thing with that too, right? Then we can move on. Mm-hmm. So let's be fair. Mm-hmm. Let's take it to this level. Mm-hmm. So in today's world, I may be out at a cafe. I may be somewhere and I meet some people at the I was at a grocery store, right? I remember I was being at a grocery store in the line, right? And I was, now you got to cash your own stuff out, right? You got to bag it. I don't want to get that's a whole other podcast, right?
You're right.
So this drives me crazy, right? This lady was next to me and we were chatting and I bought something and she was like, it was expensive. I forget. I think it was the fish. We bought some halibut, something, right? And she commented on it and I was like, yeah, it's expensive. And then, you know, because you got to be careful. All right. And then, so she was like checking me out. And then she said, seems like everything's expensive, right? And I'm like, yeah, it seemed that way.
Right.
And then she's like, and it wasn't this way a few years ago, right? And I was like,
timeline on
yeah,
it, right?
Hold on. Then I'm like, oh, yeah, it wasn't a couple years. So we like, before we start going into a conversation, we got to check out who's absolutely. Who, absolutely. Right? Like because at the end of the day, you don't know who you're dealing with, and then blah, 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 then you got a big fight, right?
Right.
Let me ask you this, though. Did these dudes do that? This is the point here. So think about it. I'm tiptoeing because you could have a conversation with somebody, right? In these political political waters, right? And they could be, it could turn bad, right? Where, how did they know? It was 10 of them, 11 of them? How did one know that the other was okay with that? And then the other knew, you see my point here. How did they know that? Okay, that's the point. Okay, is that this was just regular. And then it's like, oh, okay, let's do it. Right? Where, so that's where we are. That's the difference between, that's the difference between being a minority, mm-hmm. right? And white supremacy. Mm-hmm. Okay? Because at the end of the day, there's no way I could go to work or whatever and start talking and saying these things. Right? I would get fired immediately, whatever the case may be. Where, we've had friends of ours and all, I've seen people say, hey, as a white person, people say this stuff to me all the time because they think that I'm with it. Okay. And so that's why I'm saying it's not shocking. Yeah. Okay. It's just not shocking. Right. Yeah. So, but net, let me tell you what could be shocking. Now, Chris, you and I, we worked in corporate America and buddy, talk a little bit about, you and I did a show a while ago. And we talked about how to navigate corporate America, right? And then you had three things. You remember those three things you said, buddy? You said first you gotta drive, you gotta thrive.
Oh, I got you. Yeah, of course. This is my survive.
Right. So say it again. What was the three things? Because
first, what number one is?
So when you come into corporate America, first thing is what?
Survival. You gotta not get fired.
You gotta survive.
You gotta survive. Right. Then once you get comfortable, you got to thrive. You know what I mean? And right. Now that you feel good, you feel like, hey, you know, I don't feel like they're coming for me. I can get comfortable. I can produce and be myself and bring a level of authenticity to the situation. And then the last phase is where we're at the point of generation. And this is where we can get people jobs and recommend and have a voice and things of that nature. But it takes that stair-stepping process for you to feel like I have a place here that I could, you know, a lot of these younger folks, they come in with the kick in the door, talking, hey, I want to be the supervisor. I want to, man. And they come in with a lot of audacity. But classically, you have to get in and pay your dues. There were these old sayings, sage wisdom, go in and pay your dues, keep your head down, stay below the radar, figure it out. You know what I mean? Then once you get comfortable, then you can get to the point where, okay, I know where my need is facilitated. And I can get a little more relaxed and kind of show up and do what I need to do. And then ultimately, the holy grail is getting to that point where you're the hirer or you're the person that can give influence to say, hey, those people, those interns right there, make sure that you talk to these three or whatever the case may be. So that's how I see it from a corporate America perspective.
Okay, buddy. Yep. And I mean, we would differ a little bit on the verbiage, but I definitely understand that point, right? The way to navigate. So I want to, you know, when I think I told you this, when we went to, we were in Martha's Vineyard for the summer, for a couple of weeks in the summer at African American Film Festival. And, you know, we went and saw some of the new documentaries, movies, and stuff that were coming out that were made by people of color, which was fantastic. You got a good glimpse.
You loved it,
buddy. It was great. It was fantastic. And so I want to play a little thing that I really enjoy. My wife, Gail, matter of fact, Gail just told me, she said she wants your shirt, your T-shirt. She loves your T-shirt.
Oh, the No Kings?
Yeah, No King. No Kings. And we got to talk about that too, right? Yeah. You hate America, right, bro?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? These
anti-fascist action. Well, Antifa.
Right. We'll get to that. We'll do that next week. It's insane. But all that being said, right? So I want to play this little, just a little quick little trailer of this documentary that really, I mean, it nailed corporate America. And so we'll play a little quick little clip and let's chat about it. It's called The Memo.
I'm honored to be a part of your tribe, to be a part of your sisterhood, to celebrate you, and not just surviving, but thriving.
Cheers! Clank, clank.
Hi, I'm Carrie.
Quite the duo. So I see you met Carrie.
Carrie presented.
Who made the complaint?
Not a complaint, a concern.
Was it Carrie?
Carrie told me that you had an emergency meeting with HR.
Some of your colleagues suggested that you might feel uncomfortable.
Nexa is extremely inclusive. I feel overwhelmingly valued.
I just met this girl. How does she know all my damn business?
Minda was featured in Forbes 30 Under 30.
Minda.
Wow.
We want to make sure that everyone feels good and supported.
Are you okay?
I'm fine.
You can be honest.
Yeah, I'm fine.
Great.
So I would recommend that you check that out. You can watch it on YouTube. They have the whole 20, I think it's 24 minute. It's really, really good. And her, Kyra, I think her name is, she was fantastic in it. Really good. But somebody just said this on, it was shown. Oh yeah. My wife, she said it. Well, she got finished talking about it. It was shown at the Martha's Vineyard Film Festival. Right. And it was really, really good. And it was, buddy, it reminded everybody that saw it, it was like, that was corporate America. I mean, when you see the whole thing, you're like, that was corporate. Right. So talk a little bit, bro. And you heard, cause you used the word, survive and thrive. Right.
Yeah,
and you heard them toast. It's like, this is all about thrive. Right. And you come in and this and that. But let's dive into that a little bit. Right. Because, you know, there's unwritten rules that nobody teaches you until you get there. Mm-hmm. Right. And most and what you need. When I first came into corporate, there was a ton of unwritten rules I didn't know about. Right. You had to look a certain way. Mm-hmm. You had to talk a certain way. You had to, I wouldn't say stay in your lane, but back when we were coming up, it was more of a hierarchy, right? So, you know, you didn't go talk to somebody else outside of your boss, you know, all these other, you couldn't get no, if you had to go, everything had to stay with you and your boss and all, you know, and we can go on and on. You can add some more stuff to that, right? But a lot of young people today, they don't know how to experience that because obviously things have changed. You talked a little bit, or was it you? You talked a little bit earlier about, well, that wasn't you. It was an earlier show I was on about, no, you did just say it about the young people coming in and they want to run stuff immediately. Yes. Obviously you had the pandemic where then all of a sudden people were working from home. And then, so a lot of young kids or people first in the corporate, they didn't get to experience that water cooler experience, right? They didn't get to learn stuff by osmosis, by just being around and hearing stuff, which I learned a lot just by listening to other people's conversation. Right. And then obviously as being as a black executive, you know, the code switching and all the corporate politics that can affect your path, right? And that's one of the things I talked about, dress and talk, and all the other things, right? And so, and then let's be fair, the mental health issues that come out of it. You saw my girl banging on the steering wheel of the car, right? That's real, okay? Because, and again, you have to watch it. To be fair, what you think it is, but just watch it, right? But it's really, really good. So talk a little bit about that, man. Some of your, you know, some of the things you had to learn and some of the things that, you know, and look, we had people that we know who, and I've met people who's like, it wasn't for me. Right. They had to cut out because it just wasn't for them. So talk a little bit about that dynamic, my brother.
Man, it's this is one of our old school shows. This is how we first got started, right?
Exactly.
You know, the one thing I had to learn from some people who was willing to put their arm around me is a situation where we are programmed, we as black males are programmed that there's only room for a few of us. So therefore, we in the Thunderdome, the gauntlet, fighting each other and holding back information. And you know what I mean? We don't want, if it's more than one or two of us, then the quota has been filled. And so it was a lot of that when I was young coming up. And I had a couple brothers that put their arm around me and said, man, I see something in you, you know, this or that. But it starts with, you know, gain your relevant work experience and put yourself in a network of individuals that can get to know you as a human being and a human doing, but you got to do the job. I remember as a cat named Al Jones, and he told me, we started talking about different business things, and he was like, are you familiar with PIE? And I was like, I am. And he was like, so PIE is performance, image, and exposure. And if you keep your PIE together, you'll be able to raise the corporate ladder. He said, but just know for us, that P is table stakes. Performance is what you, if you're not performing at all, you won't get mulligans. You won't get to make a million dollar mistake.
There's no such thing as mediocrity. Okay, when it comes to people of color. That's just a fact. You gotta run it. You gotta keep it high at all levels.
At all times. And there is no oopsies or no mulligans. So that pressure by itself, from a job scrutiny perspective, where you have to be best of the best, top of the class, blah, blah, and they ask you your credentials, your background, your where did you come from, this, that, all this other stuff. And you can have somebody 8 years younger than you questioning you, right? It's just, or less experienced than you are questioning you because you didn't get the silver spoon or you're not part of this fraternity. It's just, it's so many things, so many nuanced things. I'll tell you this true story with me. When I got in, I had a guy that saw him in the elevator. And I was, you know, suited and booted. He was suited and booted. And he was like, so, hey, how you doing? We spoke because black folks speak to each other where I'm from. And we spoke and he was like, so what area are you in? Told him what area I was in. And he was like, oh, okay. I'm in the Fleet area. He didn't posture, tell me he was the vice president at this point. We were just meeting as human beings, right? And met him, seen him a couple other times at the elevator down to lunch. And then one day he said, one day I found out. Oh, he's the vice president of all of this, you know? And I'm like, what? So when I seen him again, I was like, you could have told me, you know what I'm saying? I've been cracking wise with you and all this and that. He was like, no, bro, you know, you have to find a balance of bringing your authentic self to the work environment because that's how we're going to get the best out of you. And he started mentoring me. But what he told me was, hey, just the tea leaves here is in order to get to this type of level, you have to do one of these three things. And it was get a PMP certification, get a master's degree, and be inside of a program, which is like an internal fraternity, right? Leadership program, some type of group to buddy yourself up with a network that can then help and look out for you or promote you and things of that nature. And what he said, I did. Now, he talked to me and my buddy at the time, right? And when he had that candid conversation with me and another brother, and I chose to believe it. My boy was like, I've been here. And our careers have not elevated at the same level, but the moral of the story was, you got to have a situation where your network or your internal folks, I always tell mentees this, have somebody that'll represent you positively when you're not in the room. Have somebody that'll speak up and say, oh, I know someone who would be good for that. I'm experiencing that right now in my career. When you have someone that speaks bad about you without your knowledge, and what it seems like from the clip, this woman was saying, how does she feel like she know me? I don't even know this chick. You know what I'm saying? And those things are always in the back of your mind because, and I'll end where I started. Your fear of not being good enough or your drive to just keep up is already something that's weighing on you mentally. Then when you feel like somebody's putting sugar in the tank, salt in the wound. But you know what I'm saying? When you feel like you're being, have you ever had a feeling where you felt like, man, I thought we was cool. I thought everything was whatever. And now I find out through certain channels it's dog eat dog. Have you ever had that?
Buddy, so that's the point, right? So it's all dog eat dog. And that's the part that people need to understand. Right. So you just talked about the performance part. That's like table stakes. Exactly. Bottom line, the networking part is something that people need to understand. Right. And how to build their brand. Right. Not just in their department, but outside of the department, throughout the whole company. Right. Those things are definitely things that, you know, people need to be educated on. And because a lot of times people think I'm going to work hard for my boss and then he or she will see it and they'll promote me. And I'm telling you, 9 times 10, that's not going to happen. Okay. So at the end of the day, those things, but the work hard stuff, that's, I mean, you can't do nothing without that. You won't even be there long without that. The key is, and that's why the memo was really good. And that's why I recommend that you watch, that people watch it. You can be, she was, just so you know, I'll give you this. When they were toasting because she became Forbes 30 under 30. Okay, so she was at the top, all right? Forbes magazine, she was on the cover of Forbes magazine, 30 under 30 or 40 under 40, whatever it was, right? And so she was on her way, right? And so she had did all this work. And then what happens is that somebody sees that and they want spit venom because it is doggy dog and they trip you up and they do it in a very innocuous, is that the word I want to use?
Absolutely.
Innocuous way. Okay, where you think they you're cool with them. You're the last person to think that this person's stabbing you in the back, right? And then the one saying you okay and this and that and the whole nine yards. And that's what happens all the time. And then, you know, you go to your superiors and you're trying to get people to give you advice or, you know, and then to your point, you just said something that's very key. You know, and when we had Grace Fuden on our show to talk about her experience in corporate America as a biracial woman, okay? And she grew up in a white culture. So she was able to, I don't want to say pass, but, you know, they looked at her as being white, right?
And
and she said it herself on the show. Go check out that clip. Not too good to be white. What was it called? It was too black. I forget the name of it, but check it out. It's at a Black Executive Perspective podcast. It just came out a couple of months ago. Grace Fuden, fantastic. Buddy, we've almost got like 200,000 views on that. She just killed it, right? But she said it. She said, Tony, she said there was a couple other black people that were senior executives like myself. And she was like, I didn't want to hang with them. Okay. Because if you can't have all these black people hanging together. Yeah. Okay. She said it. I was dying laughing. Right. Yeah. And so look, net, check out the memo. Yeah. Right. But a lot of your, obviously performance, you're not even there unless you're doing that. Okay. Mm-hmm. However, the things that you said, and you said the pie, right? Performance. What was I again? Image. And then what was the E?
Exposure.
So to me, those are the two more important things. Yep. The performance, that's automatic. All right. But the image.
For us, Tony.
We've
seen some incompetent. Okay.
No, buddy. I'm talking specifically black women executives, people of color, Hispanic, Indian, Asian.
Understood.
You got to bring it. You got to bring it, right? Because we've run circles around, and you're just like, and they're looking at you like, he's really good. You know, these don't even know how to do the job, but they got job. Right. All right. But look, let's not digress. So the performance part, that's automatic, right? But the image is key.
Yep.
And then what was the other part? Exposure. That's how you build your brand, right? And just to be clear here, when we say build your brand, what does that mean? And I had a life coach, her name was Lynette Dermis. My wife had her as well, right? And she taught me years ago. She said, Tony, what's your brand? And I'm like, I don't know. I like Calvin Klein. I wear, you know what I'm saying? Gucci. She's like, no.
Brand.
She said, no. She said, you don't know what I'm like? No, I don't. She said, your brand is what people say about you when you're not in the room? What's the first two, three words that come to their mind when your name comes up? Mm-hmm. Okay, flat out. And I was like, for real? And she was like, yeah. She said, you know your brand? I said, no. She said, we're going to find out who your brand is, right? So she asked me to give her like 40 names, people that I worked for, people that worked for me, people I didn't like, people that didn't like me. And she said, I'm going to find out what your brand. And then I sent her that. And like a couple weeks later, two, 3 weeks later, whatever, we had our session. She said, you ready to see what your brand is? I was like, yeah, right? And she showed me this form, and it had these five words. And these were the words that were coming up with those 40 individuals. He's inspiring. He's a motivator. He's a leader. And then she had little comments that they gave her in terms of he's this. And she said five words. She said, Tony, that is your brand. That is what people, when your name comes up, that's what people think of you, right? And so these things are so important for you to navigate. But the key is, I'm not gonna say it doesn't matter, it matters. But the one area in corporate, there's always somebody trying to trip you up.
Absolutely.
And it's all, 9 times out of 10, it's the person that you think is a good friend, and they this and that, and they stabbing you,
They patting you on the back to tenderize the entry area, right?
We'll come back to this because I want to, you know, we need to dive in this again. Go ahead, Chris, and then we'll go to the next segment.
Let me give some guidance to the audience, just on me, and I'm speaking to me specifically. On my signature line internally for emails, it says hashtag always bringing good energy, because I believe in programming people to have that expectation. So whatever news I'm bringing, the energy is good. The energy. And that's what I'm now. That's my brand.
That's is your that brand. They
like, because I put that out front, just like any logo, just like your sign behind you.
Right.
That speaks for itself. Chris is the big energy guy. So then when somebody now says, well, I had an interaction with Chris and it didn't go this way, they're like, that doesn't sound like
that. Don't
him.
Sound like Chris. That exactly. Like exactly. So and that's people speaking thing. On your behalf. Absolutely. When you're not, when that person's going to spit venom saying yep. he did this, they're like, that don't sound like Chris, because Chris ain't that the way with that type Absolutely. Of person.
Absolutely.
So, buddy, we're gonna come back with this because I think this is something, especially now, well, it's always important, right?
Yep.
But we got to get back to it because a lot of people. But look, check out the memo. You can watch it on YouTube in its entirety. Check it out. So the final thing I wanted to get to is, you know, we have right now, right here in Connecticut, there's local elections that's coming up in a few weeks. Mm-hmm. And, you know, people's got signs on the lawn and, you know, all this type of stuff, right? And, you know, when I say local elections, I'm saying mayor and attorney general and all these things. And one of the things that we get caught up in is that we think the national elections are the most important. And they're not. They're important. Okay. So don't get me wrong. They're important. But at the end of the day, your local official in your town or city or suburb, whatever, village, whatever, they're the ones writing policy. They're the ones that affect you
that
more.
Affects you.
That affects you. Your taxes, school curriculum, criminal justice, and the whole nine yards, right? So one of the things that Chris and I wanted to do today, we wanted to talk about and bring this up, and we're gonna dive into, we're gonna come back and talk more about this, is the importance of voting locally and the role that the attorney general, right, brings to the table, the AG. And the thing is that at the end of the day, you know, we look at, you know, whoever the AG is from a national standpoint, right? And rightfully so. But the people in your district or your town, you know, those individuals are the ones that's coming up in terms of, is this a fair society for everybody? Are we going to hold everybody accountable? Are we going to make sure that we treat people, the things that come up when it says innocent until proven guilty? We're going to follow that mantra. Are we going to make sure that it's fair in terms of the accountability, not just for the defendant or the accused, but also for the district attorney's office and the police department and all these other things that matter, that can change your life. Okay. Real quick thoughts, my brother, because I want to play this clip, but I want to get your thoughts on that.
That's spot on. And I think that's one of the understated and underutilized aspects of our democracy is local municipalities, public, you know, local public things that actually are closer to you and the things that affect you and your family than some of these things that are international and national and all such stuff. And to be fair, like you say, to be fair, a lot of the current administration and other administrations say that's for the states. They put that on this. They unfederalized a lot of these things. And so therefore we have an opportunity to fight back and push back against some of these things that we see before us, because the states have more power than we assumed for them to have at this point.
Right. And here's a kicker. If you look at the numbers, well, what was it? 150 something million people, 160 million people voted nationally, right? If you look at these numbers in these local races, it's people winning the race, 500 people show up, okay? It's abysmal because people don't understand that these races are way more important. And the people who understand that, they're there because they get a chance to stay in power and right. Hey, buddy, it's all the things you see on a national level is happening on a local level. But here's the thing. You know, one of the things people don't understand is the power. They understand the power of the police. They understand the power of a judge. But they don't understand the power of a prosecutor. What does that mean? What sticks and stones do they have? What is their responsibility and all these things? So we're going to play this little quick little clip. It's a little long. Why don't you check it out? And then Chris and I are going to close out. But if you have thoughts, I love for you. This is where I want you to dive in and tell us your thoughts, because I can tell you flat out, the majority of people, including myself until I saw this years ago, have no clue, really, the power of a prosecutor.
United States has the highest incarceration rate in the world. We are addicted to locking people up. Despite having only 5% of the world's population, the U.S. has 25% of the world's prisoners. The land of the free, it seems, is anything but. While we have been building a national consciousness around the causes of mass incarceration, little attention has been paid to one of the system's most powerful actors, prosecutors. A prosecutor, also known as a district attorney, represents the government in criminal proceedings against any person accused of a crime. They are actually referred to as the people because they are supposed to represent the interests of the community. Their job is to seek justice, not convictions. And prosecutors have more power than most of us realize. Prosecutors alone decide whether or not to charge a crime. They get to decide who is prosecuted and who gets a pass. They also decide what crimes to charge you with. This is important because the more serious the charge, the greater the risk a person faces by taking their case to trial. This increased risk puts pressure on a person to give up their rights and take a deal, even if they are innocent. And despite their legal duty to turn over evidence that could prove you are innocent, prosecutors themselves, all in secret, decide when to apply that rule. Given all their discretionary power, prosecutors ultimately determine how the system treats the most vulnerable people in our communities. But the problem is not just the unfair amount of power prosecutors have. The problem is the abuse of that power, which is unfortunately all around us. Investigative reporter Radley Balco explains that one of the most powerful positions in public service, a position that carries with it the authority not only to ruin lives, but in many cases, the power to end them, is one of the positions most shielded from liability and accountability. And he's right. Over 40 years ago, the Supreme Court gave prosecutors absolute immunity, a powerful legal protection that is even greater than the protection the law gives to police officers. Absolute immunity is a big deal, a really big deal. And it means that in our current legal system, who we elect to represent the people becomes even more critical. Here's what you can do. Find out who the elected district attorney is in your jurisdiction. Get to know where they stand on the issues you care about most. Make sure you know what policies and practices are implemented in your name every day. Hold prosecutors accountable with the power of your vote. It's time to ask whether your district attorney is standing up for the needs and values of the communities they serve. So, do prosecutors exercise significant power? Absolutely. But they can only exercise the power that you give them. And that starts with winning an election, which means the most powerful player in our system is really the voter. That's you.
Quick thoughts.
So, you know, one of the things is I think that we have to be more educated on the political ties to roles or jobs, because a lot of people don't know that the lawyer that prosecutes people is an elected position. They think it's an appointed position or somebody that just worked their way up, or that's what their dad did or something. You know what I mean? It's an elected, but I am a big believer, as we close, that two places that should not be run like businesses are courtrooms and colleges. But unfortunately, we're in a situation where if you follow the money, and I'm not talking about scandal or you know, bribery or any of these $50 million in a briefcase type things, you know, that we have going on. But we have to take the metrics, because like he said, it's supposed to provide justice, not provide convictions. But we all watch Law and Order all these 20, 30 years. The conviction rate.
Buddy, the conviction that's what they care rate about.
Is what their metric.
That's what they care what about. It's convictions, right?
And so we got to stop treating courtrooms and colleges like classic business models and go for these level of KPIs and think about the humanity and what's best for society as a whole. And I'll leave it at that.
No, buddy, I you had the final thought, and I'm 100% with you. And the only thing I would say, as we close out, is that we have a couple of people coming up on a couple of episodes. We have my girl Tarika Ganzi, who works for the Southern Human Civil Rights Organization, and she handles death penalty cases. So you definitely don't want to miss that. It's coming out in a couple of weeks. And then we have my brother down in Georgia, yep, right, who was a football star and got hurt and then got into the legal field and became one of the top criminal defense attorneys in the United States, and he became a judge. Yes. So yep, we're going to dive in a little bit deeper into this. So we definitely want you to stay tuned to check out those episodes, because when you hear what they're telling you, okay, and they're right there, okay, I was just watching. So look, we'll promote that big time, but definitely check it on the Black Executive Perspective podcast.
Absolutely. We want to thank you guys for tuning in. Thank you for providing feedback. Make sure that you keep coming back to get involved and get engaged. But we want to remind you at this time to check out Need to Know with Nasinga. You don't want to miss Need to Know each week, where Dr. Nasinga Burton provides crucial and timely insights to what's going on in our community. She brings a lot of energy, a lot of drive, a lot of passion, and it's absolutely something that you will be able to take back as water cooler talk, as Tony would say, to speak to people who you're engaged with. So you don't want to miss that each week. Need to Absolutely. Know with Dr. Nasinga Burton.
Absolutely. Check her out every Thursday. And don't forget to check out our next Pull Up Speak Up. Our roundtable gets together, talk about the most provocative and hard-hitting topics that's happening on a daily basis. Every voice counts. Every perspective sparks. This isn't just talk. It's a revolution. So definitely check out Pull Up Speak Up here on the Black Executive Perspective podcast.
And then we always like to impart you with the opportunity to understand our call to action, which is LESS. You know, our goal is to eliminate all forms of discrimination. And to achieve this, we're asking for everyone to embrace LESS. Less, the L stands for learn. We want you to educate yourself on racial, cultural, and political nuances to help shape your world and your community.
Absolutely. And then after you learn, you have the letter E, which stands for empathy. Now, since you've learned, you should be more empathetic to your friends and colleagues, because now you understand what they've been going through.
And then the first S stands for share. Share your insights and enlighten others. Don't hide or divide it. This is exactly why we come here every Tuesday, 6 p.m. Eastern, to share with you these ideas, these opportunities, these exposures, because we don't know it all. Go check for yourself, but come back and share with us so therefore we don't just walk around blind and ignorant.
Absolutely. And the final S stands for stop. We want everyone to stop discrimination as it walks in our path. And it's as simple as on Sunday dinner night, if Uncle Joe or Aunt Jenny says something that's inappropriate, instead of sitting back and being shocked or start giggling, say, Aunt Jenny, Uncle Joe, we don't believe in that. We don't say that. And you stop it right there. So if everyone can incorporate less, L-E-S-S, we'll build a more fair, more understanding world. And you know what, guys? We all will see the change that we want to see because less will become more.
Before I move on, check out previous episodes. Tony kind of highlighted some new things that we have coming out. Check out some of the old things we have. Make sure you tune in to us each Tuesday. But I want to say this. That last S where Tony said stop would have been apropos for the individuals on that text chain that we were talking about. If they had just listened to you and got off or said, hey, this is inappropriate. This is not, because that level of conspiracy makes it that much worse. Don't be right. So weak or so flimsy that you allow for people to drag you into something you're not predisposed to doing. And that would have been an opportune time for somebody to say, hey, that's not how we should be representing ourselves. That's not how I represent me. And we need to stop it here. That's a perfect example of where LESS would have been applicable to something that's current. But we want to make sure you tune into the things that we have here for you. We want you to go to the website, sign up for the newsletter, leave us a review of things you want to talk about. We're going to eventually talk about this No Kings thing. Make sure that you get in and give us your comments. We'll read through that stuff and bring it back to you because we want to engage with you. That's why we're here for you. This is a community spot. It's a safe space for us to discuss these things. But make sure you go and subscribe. And where can they check us out, Tony?
My friend, you can follow a Black Executive Perspective podcast right here on YouTube, Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And follow us on our social channels of LinkedIn, X, YouTube, TikTok, Facebook, Instagram, at a Black Exec. For my fabulous co-host with the most, my boy down in Dallas, Chris P. Reed, I'm Tony Tidbit. We talked about it. We learned about it. We laughed about it. We're still going to strive and thrive about it. We love you. And guess what? We're out.
A Black Executive Perspective.